Chief Energy Officer, Time to Lead. My name is Boris Diekmann, and today I'm joined by Alessandro De Luca, CIO and Head of Information Technology at the Merck Group, one of the leading global healthcare companies with 60,000 employees in 66 countries. Alessandro, we had so many fulfilling conversations on our journey, and I'm simply delighted you're here today. So, formally, welcome and thank you for making the time. Time for human conscious leadership.
Thank you very much for inviting me, Boris, and I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Oh, me too. The thought came somewhere in the last weeks, and when I send you that note, I kind of crafted a note to ask you. It took around about, I think, 5 seconds, and you said, sure, send me a date.
Absolute.
And I thought, how wonderful. And then we actually needed to change dates, and you kindly do that. So maybe just to kick us off, Alessandra, I think that it's not so much the roles that shape who we are. It's probably much more who we are that shapes our roles. And I also think that we are infinitely more than our roles, of course. And still, purely to give our listeners just a little bit of context for our conversation today, could you tell us just a little bit more about yourself? So, in other words, what gives you life in life?
Wow. I mean, to start with, these are extremely difficult questions that would require a good glass of wine to go through a fruitful discussion. But I will try with just a cup of coffee. I mean, Italian espresso, that I think is still good. So as you might hear, and you know it, but again, for the audience, from my accent, I'm not from Oxford or Cambridge. I'm from Rome, that once was the capital of the Roman Empire. And I think since then didn't progress much, as a matter of fact, but that's okay. That's another story. And then, being Italian by origin, I had a degree in nuclear energy, and I became a nuclear engineer a long time ago. That was more than, I guess, 30, 35 years ago. So it looked medieval times. And after that, I've been working for several companies, a couple of them like Procter & Gamble and Merck. And more importantly, I had a fantastic life across different countries. I speak 4 languages. My wife, she's Belgian. My son is, I'm not sure, European, I would call him, because he was born in Belgium. He lives in Italy. He's working in Paris. He has a girlfriend in Brussels. So I guess this is the European definition. And last but not least, I work in Merck, pharmaceutical company, one of the oldest pharmaceutical company in the world. And there I do the chief information officer. So in simple words, I take care about IT.
And I wanted to ask you, just say a little bit more about that. So many people have the title. What does being a CIO mean for you? What do you love about your role, and what does it mean for you?
What does it mean, CIO, for me? Means a few things. Means, first of all, responsibility. What do I mean by that? Because, as you may imagine, we are a company of 66,000 employees, take it or leave it, and if an IT system doesn't work, and we experienced it recently in our podcast, that we know sometimes IT systems do not work, well, then people cannot work. And in today's life, having not connected to whatever forms, could be an iPhone, could be a computer, and whatever, it's practically being impeding somebody to work. So it's responsibility. It's also fun. Because I do my work with passion, and working in the digital space where life cycle, where innovation is so fast, And every single day you learn, it means having a lot of fun, because learning, it means developing yourself, it means having fun in whatever you do. And then it's means care, because it's all about people, it's all about developing an organization. So it's all about caring the development of the people with whom you work. So these are probably, if you ask me, what my job consists of is definitely responsibility, fun, and care.
And then, you know, if I can share that from many of our previous conversation, you're also with Merck and in your role at the forefront of what technology can enable, including AI.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Right. If this was a video recording, then people could now see your eyes glowing.
So, AI is fascinating. AI is fascinating, let me tell you, for a lot of reasons. But first of all, I think it's the most talked concept in the world and the least understood. I mean, for whoever you ask, everybody has their opinion on AI. So starting from people that look at robot and they think the AI is robot, and then other people looks at their phone and ChatGPT and they think AI is ChatGPT, and then whoever. It's really fascinating. Once we did a survey with scientists, business people, informatics, and normal people in the job. I mean, you know, blue collar. And we ask, what does AI mean for them? And it's fascinating how different was really the definition of AI. So if you ask the business people, AI drives productivity. So it's all about, you know, the dollar sign there. If you ask to the scientists, AI drives innovation. I mean, this is a future of technology and so on and so forth. If you ask the blue collar, AI helps in my everything life because now I can connect, I get all the information that I want and so on and whatever. And if you ask IT people, they would say, well, AI is something that is, I mean, sophisticated. I mean, we want our core servers, cloud, but AI, whatever. So everybody makes what he or she wants out of AI. But the most interesting definition of AI, I've learned it or I've heard it from a guy that is called Mustafa Suleiman. He was the previous CEO of Google, the DeepMind division, and now he's Microsoft CIO and whatever. Anyways, what he said I found fascinating is that AI is a new form of digital species. That's an interesting one. So you see, in his definition, there is no association with technology or whatever else. It's a new digital species. And that's, I think, what really AI is, because you cannot confine AI in a sort of technology, but it's really a new form of digital species. So, and now we can open, you know, the forum for never-ending discussion. What is, I mean, let me try, I mean, this is a podcast, so I can ask questions. So what is AI for you, Boris?
Well, I'd say I learned the word from you. It's a new entity. And I love this yes. word because it's so much more open, right?
Yeah.
And allows us to think about it much less as limiting word of a tool.
Yeah.
And I would suggest this is so big a topic. Let us make sure we'll come back to that. And see how it relates to other things. I put this on my table here as one of the things we need to touch
yeah.
upon.
Yeah.
And I wanted us maybe to step back for a moment because you talked a little bit about your role, to give us a bit of framework. And I see this podcast really evolving over time. And there's so many different people who shared here who are all connected by that one function, that they're all leaders in one form or another. And it means different things to them. But I'd love this podcast to really become a resource for leaders out there, a go-to place for people who, like you, and that's why I thought of you, are really committed to, how should I say, to lead from the space of being a chief energy officer. So
yeah.
Who believe that being a servant leader really means being a servant first, like Robert Greenleaf put this many, many years ago, and who serve with this awareness of human energy. Now, resource can mean so many things, right? It can be a question, it can be an idea, it can be a sort of encouragement and advice, a sense of connection, or simply space for reflection.
Yeah.
Which is what you and I love so much.
Absolutely.
So if you consider this an invitation and it's really your podcast, right? So what kind of resource would you love our podcast to be? What could be the gift that it's offering?
I think for me, how do I put this? I always been intrigued by the word legacy. And, you know, we met the first time and we talk about legacy. Because, you know, I believe that we as human beings have fundamentally one purpose in life that leave this place, whatever is this place, or this planet Earth, this world, this house, in a better way than was before. If we would, and ideally do it with love. If we would do all this, definitely it's a prolongation of legacy that would make everything better, different, definitely much better than today. And this is, for me, has been always my, in a certain way, positive obsession in life and at work, in my job, in whatever I do. Let's make sure that whenever we leave, even something stupid, whenever we leave the house, we leave the house in a better place than it was. And it starts from small things. I mean, you know, it starts from the smallest of the thing to the greatest. I mean, what is my legacy in life? But if this podcast can leave a little bit of legacy for people to learn about it and to think about how they could be a bit better tomorrow after hearing any of these posts and this today, well, I think we have served our purpose of servant leadership.
Oh, I love that. That's such a wonderful invitation. You know, I even talk about that with my children sometimes. You know, it's not necessarily about achieving a goal. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with setting intentions. It's very helpful in striving for that. And if you just wonder, you know, how could I make this a little bit better right now? This conversation, this podcast, this whatever it is. And if I build on that, I have this belief that everyone has an innate gift in life, an innate contribution that you might discover later,
yes.
But it's definitely there. And it seems to me that only if we can accept that that's the gift that I was given, that I can actually give that gift. I need to accept it first. Otherwise, there's nothing I can give out of wrong
Absolutely.
Humility. So if you look back at your role right now, but also at the last years or so, what have you discovered about what is your innate gift that you like to give, and how does that show up in the way you lead on a good day?
yes, that's a good good question that I have. I don't know. I think one of the gifts that I have is that I'm able to simplify things. I'm able to connect an idea from and translate it from a complex situation into something that resonates to people. And this is so much important to the business because there are several opportunities. So opportunity number one is that how we share ideas. We know that in big corporation, you have great idea, great pockets of ideas everywhere, but the silos thinking doesn't allow to share it. So bridging R&D with commercial, bridging, I don't know, supply chain with manufacturing, connecting ideas is something that it's coming from the fact that I'm able to simplify things and to connect. The other way is that, and we go back to AI, and we joke a little bit about that before, but in technology, for example, I mean, if we take digital technology of today, the real value is not on the technology itself. The real value is that to understand how to use technology to progress, whatever is that form. And that comes from understanding what technology can do. And the fact that you are able to, again, translating on simplifying how a specific digital technology can be used and what is the value for the customer, that's some form of a gift that I try to imprint also in my organization. So, I mean, we are running information technology, digital, and so on and so far. But I always say to my organization, the technology per se doesn't mean anything. You know, it's like if you take an iPhone, the iPhone is an iPhone. But the way how can use an iPhone, and I'm just taking an example, the way how you can explain to the customer, to the user, how to exploit that for his or her advantage, user-friendly, and so on and so forth, that's where it comes in terms of really value creation. And it all boils down in, again, translating and simplifying what complexity can really do for the user. And then also it applies in everyday life, again, at work, but also in our daily life, that sometimes we found issues, we found problems that seems not easy to solve. And the capability, perhaps sometimes to step back, I even had a boss that told me once a trick that was sleep it over. And I started to adopt it now that I'm a little bit older, that sometimes where I have big problems or a situation that is not clear where is the win. Sometimes you have a situation that really may end up whatever you choose is a lose-lose. Then I try to sleep it over, to let it decant, to let it digest. And then, I don't know, you may say the universe, the gut, the brain, everything combined, the day after may give solution to this complex problem. And again, this capability to simplify things, I think is a gift that I may have it in a certain way or another, but certainly it's a gift that I'm trying to instill to the whole organization, because I believe, again, that if in whatever form organization, could be a corporation, could be an ONG, could be a political organization, could be a social organization, if we're able to simplify complex things, I think we could progress much better and faster.
I think many of our listeners can relate to that, because the problems that we're facing nowadays are by nature complex. They're not complex. They're partly complicated, partly simple, but also often complex in nature.
Yes.
There's this wonderful model out there called Siphon. I love this language. And when they're complex, we often understand relationships between cause and effect only in hindsight. And right? And I have a dear teacher of mine who said, as soon as human beings enter the room, things become complex. And he also said that sometimes the answer to a complex problem could be simple. That's what you're pointing to, right? If you create that distance. And I feel inclined to ask, you know, and what else? What are some other great gifts that you bring? And if you allow me to steer a little bit, you know, having had the privilege to work a little bit with one of your former teams, there is a lot of humanity that you bring, a lot of humanity. There is, I so recall how people were looking forward to it during Corona times. You know, you and I worked together. They said, Boris, really want to bring, let's find a way you talked just about connection, right? What you're talking about then was how can we connect the team? So if you look at yourself from that perspective, how you lead in teams and people, what would you say is one of the things that are so dear to you that come very naturally?
Thanks for prompting me in this. I believe that we should listen more, and we should listen more with our ears, but we should listen more with our heart. I mean, I believe that people sometimes tend to talk rather than to listen. And with listening, it comes the humanity that you say. Because, I mean, listening helps you to really understand the other point of view, whatever is the other point of view. I mean, can be, you know, a negotiation discussion, or can be a sentimental discussion, or can be a career discussion, whatever is the form of career. But it all starts from listening. And like I said, there are these two forms of listening that you practice both very well. Listening with the ears, that is obviously listening with the brain and the rational part, but listening also with the heart. And that is as important, if not more important, to listen with the ears. Because, you know, sometimes people can express rationally something, but their body, their vibration express something else. They want to tell you more and so on. And then if you're able to let them open, then they say what really they need and where they would like to go and so on and so forth. Now you define that humanity. Some people define compassion. I call it listening because I like that element, that listening is also giving, because what you give to the individual is the time. You give your time to them for listening to themselves, and also, like I said, listening from the heart. That is very important.
I had a friend of mine who said that maybe love is the quality of attention we give. Right, so it's maybe that way that we can give love in organizations.
I would say perhaps love with not the capital letter, but with the smaller letter. Certainly is care. Certainly is care. Care is the, and you know what is our most precious resource? We all know it's time. It's the only resource that is clearly finite. So the moment in which we give it to somebody is because we really care about something.
I love this notion that you said, you know, listening with the heart and I hear it both literally and as a metaphor.
Yeah.
How do you know that you're listening with the heart?
Fundamentally, I guess it happens when you don't think. And, you know, I recognize afterwards. I don't recognize at the moment. It's interesting. I recognize after a conversation, and normally a lot of our conversation, I listen with the heart, or I open myself to get your feeling, your vibration, your emotion to me, and try to listen as much as I can. But I recognize only afterwards, and you recognize probably from the deep of the thoughts. And even sometimes if you have light conversation, if it touch you, it means that you probably have opened yourself to that individual and you really genuinely listen to the individual. There is also the listening with the ears, that where it starts, obviously, that sometimes I also have to do it when I'm in business, because obviously, I mean, at the end, I cannot listen with the heart with everybody. And also not everybody wants to be listened with the heart. You hear somebody that really... it's purely rational and so on and so forth. But to answer your question, I always recognize afterwards, and the recognition comes from the fact that they say, well, I mean, that was really a conversation that flow without thinking, and it was so natural and so in sync that obviously both of us have opened our heart.
Yeah, I can relate to that. And I sometimes feel we touch a truth when both can feel it at the same time, when both know, ooh, we just touch upon something. And maybe it's not about, you know, we often talk about the head and the heart. Maybe it is really about they need each other. It's about when they're both connected, you know, the head takes information from the heart. And we know this even scientifically, right? There's that separation is an artificial separation. There's information flowing from the body to the head, and the head sends information to the body.
Absolutely. Right?
So it's about nurturing that connection so we can tap into both. And I'll, you know, it's how wonderful if you say that from your role. So you have a leadership position in a global company that wants to make profit and has to for their shareholders.
Yeah.
And information technology at first sight is something extremely rational, and it takes, you know, a bright mind to think it through. So maybe to just pause on this for a moment, if we didn't listen from the heart, as you said, or with the heart, what would we lose?
Well, then I think in everything, let's start obviously from the professional side where it means the most. We would work only with the what and not with the how. And let me give you some example. I mean, whenever you do a project, whatever form of project and whatever, they always say, well, you have to do the change management. I mean, change manager and communication. I mean, we all know, I mean, obviously, and we do change manager and communication and so on and so far. And what we do with change manager communication, we say, okay, why do we do this change? What is the value for me? What is the change in the organization? That is all the what that, if you want, is listening with the ear. Sometimes, and that's where the change manager really doesn't work, we don't think about the how. So how this relates to the individual, because, you know, I mean, we are all different individuals in a different phase of life, in a different piece of the organization with different expectations. And the what is something that everybody can rationalize, but that's something that also everybody will forget. The how will stay. So if you're able to touch the individual and make sure that he gets engaged emotionally to whatever form of transformation of project, that's when really the sustainability of the change will remain and will be successful. So this is why it's very important in business that the listening with the ears and with the heart, the what and the how, they go hand in hand. And the bigger is the challenge, the more important is the emotional investment to get the people engaged. At the end, every single organization is made of people, and people make it or break it. So that, and sometimes we believe that if we say, you know, 300 plus 200 is equal 500 on a pure rational basis, everybody will get it. But people will get it, but will forget. If you explain that 500 will help the lives of individual, will really cure malaria or whatever form of tuberculosis, I mean, whatever touch the people, that's where people relate to it. And that will make them eventually changing better that specific project. So touching the heart of the individual is fundamental.
I so love how you're relating to the fact that what we call listening is not is not disconnected from the other person. So one is like, what do I pay attention to and what do I listen to? Like, what is happening? If my body could talk, what would it say?
Exactly.
Right now?
Yeah.
But at the same time, and you can look at this from a metaphorical level or a quantum level, you know, how I listen has a direct impact. You know, my state has an impact on the state of the other person. It's how I look. Right at the quantum in front of me has an impact on the quantum, and I often feel that, you know, when we talk about appreciation and people feeling appreciated, that the simplest form is that they feel they feel heard. I feel heard as a human being. I feel that my idea that is emerging in your presence is connecting with you and therefore having an impact, because fundamentally we're shaping ideas. We're creating through conversations.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly. And then I'm surprised how many times we underestimate the thank you phrase. And still I'm getting surprised. So what do I mean is that I try always to to say thank you to everybody and so on and so far and whatever. But of course, sometimes I forget and so on and so forth. And I still sometimes get surprised that some people say, I was in that meeting and whatever, and they said, and nobody say thank you to me. So it's really something that we should learn. We should learn to thank the people for what they do every single time, because it's a form of appreciation, care, and making sure that they are heard, like you said, or if whatever work they do, their work is valued. And this is something that changed the life of individual. You know, if you, like me, we live in a place where everybody say thank you to us, we are happy. We are happy because we feel, empowered. We feel that our people care. It takes so little to really create an happiness moment, an engagement moment, and still we do it so little time.
Yeah, it's a little bow. Yeah, every time.
Yes.
Every time exactly. I say that, it's a little bow to exactly. you and to your beauty.
Exactly. And even, sometimes I've asked information via email. I say, I need this, I need that, whatever. Can you please provide? And then I forget even to say the simple thank you. I try to force myself, but still sometimes forget. And then I regret it because really, those people have been running to provide information. And so long story short, saying thank you more often will help all of us.
Thank you. And maybe just for a moment, just to change perspective, I don't know if we can put kind of our careers into phases, right? But it's kind of the phase where, and you shared this so often, where so much about what you're doing is about giving back, and helping other people to grow into roles, which you now embody and feel, okay,
yeah,
I can do this now. I'm still learning, but there's so much I can give back. If you could... if you could meet your younger self, the younger, maybe 10 years younger Alessandro, and the younger Alessandro would have a walk with the Alessandro that is in this podcast, right? And you would just be a caring companion for your younger self. What do you think your younger self would have wanted you to ask about? What would the younger Alessandro asked the more mature Alessandro? And how would you probably have responded if the two just had a walk together today?
It's an interesting conversation that we should have it. Probably, the younger me would have asked, how can I build long-term success versus short-term goals? How to really balance the long term, and that's not an easy answer, because you need both fundamentally, and the right answer. So first of all, there is not right answer. There are only potential answer, and it depends according of you the moment of your career and so on and so forth. But definitely you need both. But this is important, is that. Is the word both. So it's what I call the end proposition. You need short-term success and building long-term strategy, not you need or. So it's really the value of the end proposition rather the value of the or proposition. And that's something that, again, if I would go back, that if I would have balanced these two elements in a better way, because sometimes I was too much focused on the short term, sometimes I was too much thinking on the vision of the long term. I mean, with the experience that today, I would have matured where is better how to balance it. And then I would have asked my younger self, well, which suggestion would you have to the older one? My younger self would have told me, remember the phrase of Steve Jobs, be hungry. And this is important in the phase of the career in which we are coming to, like you define, eldership. Remain hungry, remain curious, remain, looking forward that the next project is going to be the most exciting project. Keep that passion intact that you have it, obviously, when you're young. But sometimes when you get older, it gets smoother. That's the challenge that my younger self will give it to me.
Oh, I so love it that you're kind of bringing and saying, well, they can both have a conversation. They can both advise each other. And,
yeah.
And to a sense, I believe that we are all our ages. They're all available,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You're at the same time 40 and at the same time 50. And I think what you're pointing to, this notion of non-dualistic way of looking at things probably becomes, you know, you pointed to that complex environment. In complexity, non-dualistic thinking is probably becoming more and more essential. I had a conversation with a client years ago, and he said, well, we absolutely have to stop doing that and start doing that. So
yeah.
They stop this and start that. And I said, all right, and tell me more. And then you share and say, that's probably a good idea. And when you do that, what will you be losing? So what is it that we're leaving behind? And out of that came a more balanced conversation. So here are things that we'd like to continue doing and evolve, and what comes on top of that. And it's maybe a wonderful conversation to have from time to time. You know, hello, my 30, 40-year-old self.
Exactly right. Exactly. I have the same conversation with my son, but it's... It doesn't work as smooth as I would like.
and then as you think about your younger self, I'm also wondering, my sense is there are so many, at least for myself that's true, there's so many people who have supported us on our path, sometimes consciously by being there for us, and sometimes maybe unwittingly, because they posed a challenge to us, and they don't even know that they contributed to our path. So, if you look back to your own onto your own path that you traveled through a beautiful landscape, what do you think were some pivotal moments, maybe people or events, that somehow informed how you look at your role and the way you lead today? So, you know, probably doesn't come it. Who were those people where you felt like, oh, now I see something that I didn't see before?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, it's a combination of probably of people and moments that together shape and make our life choosing in a crossroad, one direction or another. And well, out of the many crossroads that I have it, I mean, one was when I started working, I mean, in Italy and so on, and I had the opportunity to get an assignment abroad. And obviously it was exciting and frightening because having lived, work always in the same country and moving in abroad was, I mean, like I said, exciting because discovering a new world, but challenging. I mean, how do I live alone and whatever? And then at that point, I remember that my mother was really pushing me to go abroad and to experiment, which I deeply appreciated and gave me the assurance of that. And then, I mean, I can imagine that if that would have happened the opposite, I don't know if I would have gone abroad or I don't know if I would be successful but having somebody supportive from your family was all obviously very, very important to me. And then I would say that in all the decision, when I left, I was working in Procter & Gamble and I moved to Merck. So I left a company very successful to move to another successful company, but still in a different sector and so on and so far. Or whenever I change from business into IT, I always ask the opinion of my wife. And again, she always gave me the right suggestion, not in terms of answer, but in terms of question. Like, did you ask yourself this? Did you consider this and whatever? Which I always found it extremely useful, because indeed somebody who tells you, I don't know, yes, go to that company because the salary is better and so on, yeah, definitely is a good suggestion. But somebody who helps you to question the choices was at that point always extremely helpful, and an opportunity to grow myself, because was creating a self-reflection over myself. So these probably were a couple of crossroads and a couple of individuals which helped me throughout the journey of life.
And it's the question that she offered to you. Have you considered the following?
Yeah, exactly. Have you considered this? Have you thought about this? What do you, absolutely. And that, like I said, I mean, I think that if there is something that I'm also try to explain to my son and to my organization and whatever, is exactly, it's not about the right answer, it's about the right question.
And that, I think you kind of en passant, you just in a side sentence mentioned the notion of eldership, right?
And
when we recently spoke, this is, I think, a notion that came up, and you know, we talked about what comes after leadership, right? And it's not like leadership is finished. You're in a leadership responsibility until the very last day when you're there, and maybe beyond. We said, and maybe there's something else emerging that we could call eldership, and that eldership might consist of, you know, what your wife is offering to you, like pausing and offering a question that can be a gateway to higher thinking, like a question that nobody would have asked at that moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I think to your point, I think leadership never stops, but leadership, like love, like career, they evolve through different phases, and it's important to understand which phases you are and what type of leadership is required by you at that moment. You know, I had the previous CEO of the company, not the current one, the previous one, whom I asked once, what's the secret of leadership? And he told me, you know, the secret, there is no secret, blah, 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 and so on, but there is one. It's all about timing. So the timing when to show a form of leadership, the timing when to take a specific decision or not to take a specific decision. So leadership is all about getting the right timing. And the more I reflected, I mean, even if it seems trivial, the more I believe he is right in the broader terms of the concept of timing. And it's exactly what you said now. Now next year I will be 60. So I'm in the phase of leadership that we can call it eldership, which I like it very much, that is really building the organization for the future. So really making sure that whatever I will leave will be sustained across the next generations. I mean, generation is a big ambition, but it's really something that you want to build for the future. You don't need anymore to prove yourself. You need to prove yourself through building the legacy of the others. And we go back to the legacy concept that we said before.
How lovely. It's maybe just like in families, right? As long as you're in parentship, you're really in the operation, right? In the daily doing, right? We need to get up. We have to do this. We have to 100 decisions you take. And as you come into the grandparent, like the eldership position, you can take a bit of you can step back and observe the bigger picture, and maybe ask yourself, I will probably take away from what you're sharing, putting this as a question, this is the time for what? Now, right in this conversation, is the time for what? And how can I contribute?
Yeah.
And then you're just giving me an idea, maybe this is the right time to come back to the topic from the beginning of our conversation and ask a different question. So you mentioned earlier artificial intelligence as a new species, right? As a new species. And at first sight, it might seem a bit strange to bring AI into a conversation about human-centric leadership. And I think it belongs right here. and as it's becoming a central and a defining part of our current experience and a future experience of humanity. So in your role as a CIO of a pharmaceutical organization, you're, I think, at the very heart and at the forefront of all these developments, probably talking with people left, right, and in front of you. That's one perspective. And then on the other hand, of course, you're a leader, you're a chief energy officer yourself. So with that in mind, what is, in your view, and it's also one of these questions that maybe don't want to be spoiled by an answer. It's more an invitation, right? So,
yeah.
So what is the relationship between leadership and AI?
I think it's, let me take it from another angle. This is, let me take this angle that I love it very much. There is a fantastic video in YouTube from Yuval Noah Harari, the great writer who wrote Homo Deus, Homo Sapiens, and so on. It's 45 minutes. I think it's called AI and the Future of the World, something like that. I invite each and every of you to have 40 minutes on this YouTube video. But fundamentally, I think he was really explaining the following. I'll try to summarize it in few words. He was saying the following. So AI is a form of artificial intelligence that throughout the years has been developed through the use of more powerful computer. It gets to some level. There is humanity that has always been progressing, I mean, throughout the centuries and so on and so forth. But now we are in the unique moment in which, thanks to generative AI, that is a form of AI, the human and the machine or AI can talk to each other. And what Yuval Noah Harari was saying is that he was saying, remember that the language, the written and verbal communication, was the biggest way for human to progress, because that was translation, sharing of information, knowledge, and so on and so forth. Now is the first time in the history of the world in which the language, that is the operating model of humanity, is shared between AI and human. So generative AI, it's just a language. It, by the way, it's called large language model, but it's a way how we can finally communicate with the machine, if we say in the reductive terms, or the broader AI, if we say in a different term. So now we can communicate. And through the communication, unlimited opportunities arise in negative and positive, positive, fortunately, negative, unfortunately. So to go back to your original question, I mean, the role of leaders in today is to understand the AI is there to stay, is a fantastic contribution to the humanity because it's one of our partners. I was telling in one of our conversation is that you should think AI not anymore as a tool, but as a teammate, because it's somebody with whom you can share. You can try yourself. I mean, the same question that I really invite you. You know, you have to do your next podcast with AI. And you ask to AI the same question that you ask any of the podcasts. And you will appreciate the depth of the answer and the non-triviality of the answer itself. So fundamentally, the new role of leadership is understanding how now in the human universe and the planet Earth, we have a new entity or a digital species, like being called, with whom we can collaborate, with whom we can grow together, with whom we can develop new journeys, but also could misuse, could threaten us and the humanity. And that's very important to understand. And again, we are not talking about a programming tool. We are not talking about the new supercomputer. These are all tools. We are not talking about a robot. These are all machines. We are talking about an entity or digital species that is there to stay forever.
And what I'm hearing, what you're saying is it's almost like it's not only that we created something, we've taken something away. So there is no translation needed anymore, like programming language.
Yeah.
So I can speak, I can communicate directly with a whole new entity. And the thought that emerges in me is that these two are interdependent. So the quality of things that I ask my new teammate, as I'm speaking those words, have an impact on the entity itself because
exactly.
It's learning.
Exactly.
So that means that probably my own consciousness, my own awareness, my own evolution as a leader impacts AI, which is impacting me. That feels like an infinite relationship.
Exactly. Think about how you have been learning in your life. You've been learning in your life through life experience, but through the interaction with other human beings. And probably you have 100,000 of interaction, probably, or with human beings throughout all your life. And you learn throughout all this interaction and so on and so far. Think about AI that have 7 billion of interaction every single day with all humanity, how much it can learn and adapts and so on and so far. And you know, I mean, people were saying, yes, but it's not creative. Well, it was not creative. It learned to be creative. It's not empathic. Well, it learned to be empathic. So we need to understand that, like I said, AI, it's artificial, but it's intelligent. And this form of intelligence can learn how to do things. And it's interesting enough when you have conversation and you try to be more personal about asking, but what do you really think about the future of life and so on? You get interesting answer from the AI. Like as an exercise, you know, I mean, we have been having fantastic dinner with friends with good wine, and we were asking these friends with a good wine, what is the future of life? And, you know, depending on the quality of the wine, the answer about the future of life would change. And then I do the exercise that I ask AI, I mean, ChatGPT and so on, what is the future of life? And he was explaining the future of life according to Christian religion is this, according to Buddhist and whatever. I say, no, what do you think is the future of life? And the answer was, well, you know, I'm an artificial intelligence, so I'm not sure that I've ever asked myself this type of question. But I guess if we'd ask this question, I would say that the future of life is in every time learning and every time evolving by asking the question itself, how can progress in my form of intelligence? Something like that, which I found deeply interesting and so on. And then I progress in the conversation without boring the people here. But the point is that the depth of the answer and the reflection that gave it to me were, wow, I mean, not even my most serious guys or depth philosopher that I've read would have provoked me such sort of self-reflection out of this conversation with AI, except the podcast with Boris, which are always a food for reflection and the high point of the day.
But what a wonderful story you're sharing there. So the way you're asking and pointing AI back to itself has an influence, of course, of how this entity might be responding and evolving at that very same time.
Yeah.
And you're also pointing to the fact that maybe one of AI's deepest traits is creation.
Yeah.
And if I put next to that, that leadership fundamentally, in essence, is creation, is helping create something from nothing. How do the two relate then? So if they're both about relation, about creation, forgive me, what is it in the realm of leadership that AI can do and what can it not do from your view?
I think what can do, you know, leadership is about solving difficult problems, and AI can solve difficult problems. Leadership is about decision making, and AI can help in decision making. If you offer a problem, you can offer a solution and whatever decision. Leadership is about knowledge, about facts, history, and so on, that can help you to get a broader perspective on the framework, and AI can definitely do this. Then, and this is what AI can do, and sometimes can do even better and certainly faster than a human being. What AI cannot do is that a sort of moral compass, because leadership has also a moral compass. So you may think that that is the right business decision, but not is the ethical decision or the moral decision. This, I don't think AI can distinguish between what is a moral decision or an ethical decision versus a business decision. Interesting enough, because I tried to challenge AI on this, and the answer of AI was, well, moral, in which type of moral? The Western moral, the Chinese moral, the Eastern moral, because there are different ways of thinking. So even sometimes when ourselves, we believe that we have a moral compass, it's a moral compass of a Western Christianity type or whatever, that may be different from other places. But anyways, AI, I don't think, can do that. And then the other thing that AI cannot do is that listening with the heart. AI can listen with the ears, but AI cannot listen with the heart. So, but many people also cannot listen with their eyes. You see what I mean? So it's not only AI. And you know, sometimes I laugh because, I mean, some people say, oh, my God, you know, he's doing this hallucination. He's doing a lot of false things and whatever. And then I'm like, well, even possibly the next president of the United States is doing a lot of hallucination and is doing a lot of false things and still may become president of the United States or whatever. You see what I mean?
I hear what you're saying. And I love what you're saying. It cannot listen with the heart.
Yeah.
It might not be able to love, although it might talk about it. And you're reminding me in this moment of this quote from Einstein, which is very dear to me, and I think he said something around the lines of, we should take care not to make the intellect our God. It has, of course, powerful muscles, but no personality. It cannot lead. It can only serve.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the role of AI. He didn't know about AI yet.
Yeah.
But maybe
exactly
I'd say
that. Exactly right. But definitely, for me, AI is one of the biggest, I don't know if I want even to call it invention, but even one of the most transformational changes that will happen in the humanity. I mean, you know, in the history of humanity, there have been discontinuity points. This is one of the discontinuity points. And we should be so excited, proud, lucky at the same time, because we are really at the discontinuity point and we can appreciate what the future will bring us. That will be fascinating new things, will be some bad things like everything, you know, every change, pro and cons and whatever. But we are really at the edge of a fantastic discontinuity that will shape the future of humanity.
And I'm just thinking, you know, in the spirit of our conversation being a resource for our listeners, which it is anyway, but maybe another angle of this, given that you're so close to this whole topic, what would you say is one thing that all leaders can begin to do or to ask or pay attention to in the light of AI and everything that it offers and all the questions it brings? So where can people start? I can see it obviously for people who do tasks that AI can do, but what is something that you invite all leaders to begin wonder about, to do, to explore?
There is no one thing, but there is one attitude, that is, be curious. Be continuously curious in what, in this specific case, AI can do. Curious means try, test yourself. Don't hear things, really try, test yourself, whatever, and continuously learn with it. you may be surprised by yourself, and then again, you can use it for whatever. This is like, I mean, use a metaphor, the car. You can use the car to go to the shop to buy the bread. You can use the car to enjoy life and go on holiday. You use the car to race as fast as possible. You can use it in a different way, but experiment yourself. Being curious is the best suggestion that I can give, really. Don't listen too much. Don't hear too much. Don't read too much. Don't be scared too much. Don't be excited too much. The myth and reality about AI are infinite. Sometimes I hear things that are amazing. People confusing AI with robot, confusing AI with, you know, iPhone, whatever, you name it. Anyways, be curious. Be curious. Experiment. Try. And start with ChatGPT. Start to ask questions that really are a little bit more difficult than who is Boris Dickman, who is Merck AGA, who will be, you know, I mean, people sometimes ask questions that are a bit stupid. What is the stock market next move? And of course, AI, what can it say? But appreciate what source of knowledge can provide and even reflection points. But be curious. Be curious because whatever you will learn today will be different tomorrow. Will be it. Change in this space are so fast that whatever can be, poems with AI, you know, 2 years ago we said AI can never write poetry. Now you write fantastic poetry. AI can never paint an abstract paint. Now it paints abstract. You see, technology is so fast that the right attitude is curiosity.
And that is probably, you know, what a wonderful prompt, because that probably in itself goes beyond AI.
Yes,
the
absolutely.
Sense of curiosity is, we need it in a practical stance in every conversation, because I can feel your stance towards my idea, and maybe AI can feel that too. And the other notion is, what would be an unusual question? I sometimes in workshop ask people, you know, can you take a moment to write down kind of your favorite questions? What are you typically asking the people that you're leading? And I'm often astounded by how narrow they are. Like, you know,
yeah.
How far are you on this? When will we be ready? And there's so many other useful questions that point the attention elsewhere, right? Like, how would you like to be led by me?
Yeah.
I'm looking a little bit, just having, you know, looking at my watch, and I have this intention of keeping this kind of in an hour, thinking that's kind of maybe the average time of a car, you know, of a ride with a car somewhere. So maybe as a way of asking, one of these unusual questions,
yeah.
Which, however, I've asked everybody who came to this podcast. So if you had a magic wand, and with that magic wand, you could make one change that would improve the way we lead, and it would just happen, right? You don't have to worry about it happening. How would you use that magic wand? What would you ask
Wow.
for?
What I would ask for, it's an interesting question. I would say that if we talk about leadership, it's really about developing the next generation of humans, of leader, of organization, and so on and so forth. And so what I would like to see is that we would all that we would reward more the human aspect, the humanity that you would say before, and so on and so far. So I would wish that every single leader would be more human and caring and servant, and even myself. If I would ask, I would have that wish. I would like really to be a sort of Gandhi of leadership, really thinking in a different way about that, because this I really believe is the right way of leadership. But it's difficult. I mean, it's difficult. It's not what they talk in the leader book. It's not what you practice in the daily life. It's not what reward and recognition look like in the corporate, in the politics, in the organization. But really, if we would lead more with care and love, that would be ideal. And again, the only example that I could have, leaders who led with care and love, is Mahatma Gandhi. Probably there have been other. I mean, you know, Jesus Christ, Buddha, if you look to religious, philosophical. But these are more, you know, abstract elements. Mahatma Gandhi lived like 100 years ago and so on and so forth. And there are many others. I don't want to say, oh, you forgot this and you forgot that. But really, this sort of, you can make, I mean, make India independent with love and care. Wow.
Thank you for bringing Gandhi in here, who was a remarkable leader, spreading, you know, his principles until today. And is somebody that we can absolutely learn from. When I had a point of view on leadership and was unfolding that power that, you know, and the impact it had. So thank you for bringing that in. And I think it's perfectly fine to be imperfect and just fall forward and stumble and say, well,
yes,
that was not Gandhi-like. Well, and ask, well, how would he have done it with a bit of distance? So, Alessandro, what could I say? No surprise. You know, what a gift this conversation is. Wonderful perspectives, wonderful questions.
My gift.
Thank you so much. I'd like to invite all our listeners, you know, please like, share, comment so that these conversations can spread, can lead to the next conversation, can lead to the next question. And we don't know what it brings. Alessandro, this has been a gift. Thank you very much.
Boris, it's been my pleasure. As usual, it's a real pleasure to talk together in any occasion, in podcast, in daily one. And like I said at the beginning, I'm looking forward to hear your next podcast with AI as a guest.
Challenge accepted.
Excellent. Thank you, Boris. Big hug. Ciao, ciao.